Hello, everyone. This is Singing Lisa. Welcome to another Focus podcast. We're glad you took the time to come by once again to meet great people and learn about the great things they're doing in and around the city and the world. And of course, as always, during this time of the pandemic, we definitely continue to pray that you and your loved ones and friends are well, and that as cities and states are lifting the restrictions, you don't get out too fast and too quickly, but you do still take great care while you're out so that you can rejoin the world in a safe way. But of course, we are here to talk about continued efforts in the pandemic and how it's affecting everyone. And especially today, I am very thrilled because, you know, my senior citizens, the very special group that are near and dear to my heart because of my wonderful mom and my experience with her. But I have a doctor here who can give me the inside information on the statistics, I'll say. And so I want to introduce Dr. Thomas Reske, who is an assistant professor in clinical medicine. He completed medical school in Germany, earning combined MD and PhD degrees. Now, he completed his internship and internal medicine residency at State University of New York at Buffalo, New York. And then Dr. Reske went on to a four-year combined geriatrics and hematology oncology fellowship at Boston University Medical Center. Now, after all of that, you know, he is board certified in internal medicine, geriatric medicine, hematology, and oncology. But his interest and research interest is cancer in the elderly. Well, Dr. Reske, am I saying your name right after all of that?
Well, thank you so much for the introduction.
Wonderful. It is a thrill to meet you. Glad to be able to talk to you. And thank you so much for taking time to share with our listeners who are just continuing to ingest all of the information that is everywhere about the pandemic. And I don't think we could ever learn enough because something new keeps popping up on the horizon.
On an hourly basis, I mean, the information is just changing so rapidly.
A lot. Well, I could assume that because we're in New Orleans, that you are a New Orleanian. I can probably say you are now, but where are you originally from?
So from my heart, for sure, a New Orleanian, right? But so I grew up, or I was actually born in Buffalo, New York, but then grew up in Germany near Düsseldorf. That's where I grew up.
Wonderful. Well, you know, I always love how people find their way to New Orleans, and that just means there's just a magnet that draws everyone here, and that works well for me.
It is a magnet. It feels like home, and it has been home for almost 10 years now.
That's wonderful. Well, I'm going to ask you, what was your average day like before, I can say, BC, before Corona?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting in the preparation when I had to rethink on how this whole pandemic played out for me. And I sort of feel, for sure, we had a great Mardi Gras. We have two kids. One is 2 years old, and then one will turn one now, right? So I feel we were all focused on Mardi Gras. I had a lot of school activities. And then all of a sudden, the thing I really remember was that Friday, and I believe it was the 13th, where all of a sudden we were told, hey, there will be no more school. There is an outbreak. So in clinics and in the hospital, at that point of time, it hadn't really transpired much, right? I remember there was a patient who might have traveled overseas and then had a cough in clinic, and then all of a sudden was all these concerns. But really, when the schools closed and then I was on hospital service starting the following Monday, it really transpired. Because then all of a sudden the hospital turned, I wouldn't say into a war zone, because I haven't really been in a war zone, but that's what it truly felt like. There was a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear. There wasn't for sure enough protective gear. And it wasn't really clear in what direction we are heading. So, it was a big changer in your regular life, right? That's what I truly remember. And having family that lives overseas, so my parents live overseas, and actually my mom was on a trip to Nepal. She goes every year and helps out in a local hospital over in near Kathmandu. She all of a sudden got sort of trapped in all these travel restrictions. It actually, yeah, then became clear we are having a problem here, right? And then we sort of learned, with having so many people from all over the world attending our Mardi Gras celebrations, that most likely caused the disease to really explode in the New Orleans metropolitan. And for sure, with my patient population that has a lot of comorbid conditions and is up in the age range, there was significant concern, not only from a disease contracting perspective, but for sure on how do you get food, right? How do you get help for things that you usually get help with? So it was quite a life-changing event when this whole thing broke out. That's what I remember. And it's not that it has been forever, but it sort of feels like forever, right? It's like whole uncertainty that was there at the beginning, not knowing really how it might be contracted, right? Because at the beginning there were lots of questions on how do you get infected. And what I remember as well is when I saw patients following sort of this outbreak, there was sort of this uncertainty. Well, how do you act, right?
What's the protocol?
Yeah, how is sort of the procedure, mm-hmm. right? I'm a very, I wouldn't say like physical person, but there are lots of elderly patients that when I see them, we usually hug each other, right? In order to welcome them to clinic and making sure, or social, the social degree, and all of a sudden it was all a no-no. Mm-hmm. From this being a yes, and how you greet, and you know, you greet and welcome the family members usually to visits. That was for sure a significant change. And I even had someone in clinic yesterday who tried giving me his hand, right? And then he's like, well, this is so, yeah,
it's hard. So
deep in me that I usually, when I meet someone, I want to shake hands and just welcome someone, right? And he's like, I really shouldn't. So it really has changed things a lot.
I am sure. Our entire culture is based on touching and feeling and making sure everyone is comfortable, you know, where they are and what they're doing. So it has been a shock to our culture and our system here in New Orleans as in every way. So I understand exactly what you're saying. And I think it had to be difficult for so everybody, but really being in the medical profession and treating your patients, how do you avoid touching when that is so clearly a part of what you do? What were some of the treatments that you were accustomed to providing for your patients on a daily visit, a routine visit?
Yeah, I mean, so I do two different things. So I wear two different hats. So not only will I treat cancer patients, I also have a clinic where I just treat geriatric patients, right? So it depends a little bit on which patients we are talking about. But the usual days prior to COVID was really trying to make sure that cancer patients receive their treatments or their follow-up visits, right? In order to make sure that we do the appropriate cancer surveillance, and the geriatric patients were based sort of on their needs and whatever was the issue for that particular visit, right? The whole COVID outbreak brought some new layers of complexity, especially for the geriatric population. I will have to say loneliness, right? And then this whole social distancing, a lot of issues in regards of, you know, their quality of life. And one of the things that I have frequently seen now during the outbreak, that due to this lack of social interaction, being together with other family members or friends, that all of a sudden you run into the issues of dehydration, not eating, maybe not being able to even get food. I remember when we had the initial outbreak, I even had problems getting certain produce or certain products in the supermarket. Now, this becomes even more complex, let's say, if you can't drive and need assistance with driving, and all of a sudden there is no transportation, right? So, I mean, huge challenges, including, you know, if you need transportation to go to the pharmacy, there were all of a sudden medications that were in short supply. I even had some patients who were treated for rheumatologic diseases, and there was certain news on that some drugs which are being utilized for other diseases might sort of work in COVID patients, and then all of a sudden they weren't able to get their regular medication. So, and those are all things I had not personally experienced before, neither had any of my colleagues. So that was very stressful to see. Now, from a personal perspective as well, I had a grandma that turned 107, and then she was put in social isolation as well. And unfortunately, with dehydration and not eating right, she unfortunately passed away. So not so much because she contracted COVID, but due to her being confined to the room, and then the inability really to eat and be her usual self, I think is what had detrimental effect sort of on her health. And I think especially in the senior citizen population, that is something that we are learning more and more now about. Mm-hmm. Now, from a cancer perspective as well, a lot of patients got very insecure or very afraid to come to clinic visits, right? Because it had been very clear right from the beginning that patients with immunosuppression or patients that have a lot of comorbid conditions would fare worse. So one of the things we had seen initially in clinic is that cancer patients would not show up for their clinic visits for good reasons, right? Because mm-hmm. there's a lot of uncertainty on you know, how you would prevent spread in clinic, and there was concern that you might contract the disease coming to the hospital. But what happened fairly soon, and that's something we talked about a little earlier, was really this magnificent transition into the telemedicine world. And one of the things that I have been enjoying, and you always need to look at the good sides, right? There are always two sides with everything in life, is that one has been really able to become part sort of the home environment and learn how patients live, who they live with, whether it's the cat, the dog, the family members running around in the background. Some patients might prefer to lay in bed and that's their most comfortable position, right? Versus others might be sitting on the porch and enjoying sort of a fresh air around their nostrils while they talk to you. So it has been a very big eye opener. I think we all have learned to adjust better to the situation.
Yes.
There are some people who struggle with, for sure, significant anxiety, because it's unclear sometimes on, you know, what procedures to follow and what's the right thing to do, and whatever might be the right thing to do in the morning might not be the right thing to do in the afternoon, as we learned from new media revelation, mm-hmm. or you know, from some public announcements. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's been really a process where nothing stays static, but it's very dynamic, and we continue to learn.
Yes.
Now, a big eye-opener for me, since I work in a nursing home as well, was the mm-hmm. whole impact on the nursing home population, right? Because that puts a whole different complexity on this whole COVID outbreak as well. Because a hospital, unlike an acute care hospital, has historically not sort of the resources in terms of all this protective gear. No one ever thought sort of there might be a pandemic outbreak where let's say you need all these masks, and you need goggles that shield you from
fluids.
Any fluids. So, I mean, the biggest challenge at the beginning was really learning how to adjust sort of with some more limited supplies. I mean, eventually that all played out, and we all received more supplies, but that was really, really challenging. And then the fear sort of the residents per se not being able to see family members in person. I think for sure it helps when you are somehow technology savvy, mm-hmm. Since with something like FaceTime or other means of communication, some residents were still able to see family members, quote unquote, but it becomes challenging for those who either don't have the luxury of having such an opportunity, or not being cognitively able to do that. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's for sure a big eye opener.
Yes, you've touched on several areas that are definitely questionable and are very curious. And I wanted to ask, so first of all, you are seeing cancer patients, but it's not specifically for the geriatric population. It's across the board.
Well, most of my patients will be in the geriatric age range, right? I see younger patients for sure as well. But my research interest is the cancer in the older adult. And as we know, there are certain changes with aging. There's less organ reserve, and especially when you think about immunity, there is changes within the immune system, within the bone marrow, where we have a downregulation, let's say, of the lymphoid system. We have more, let's say, mutations within the myeloid system. So the older adult is just different than the younger adult. And for sure that is concerning when you talk about a disease that might try to invade the body.
Yes.
And you don't have the same immunity as someone younger.
That was my concern, and I think that was made clearly by the repetitious information being provided by the media, and as they learned, you know, from the medical profession about the suppression that the underlying issues that other people would have, which made it more difficult for them to fight physically, you know, the disease. Now, when your patients were, of course, rightfully afraid to come for treatment, what were some of the adjustments you had to make to provide them cancer treatment? Did it become just the telehealth, or were there medications that were delivered?
Yeah, so For some patients, we had sort of the chance, let's say, to change medications from something that you would give through the vein, so intravenous, to an oral medication. So there are more options these days, and some patients then transitioned into a different medication. It's also approved for the same cancer, but might work in a different way. Right? And that would circumvent the necessity to come in for infusions. Mm-hmm. Some of the issues that we ran into is that some treatments need to be applied by the help of, let's say, the interventional radiologists. And for some time, they were told by, or the issue was sort of was all about preservation of the personal protective gear. So that the hospital, you know, made sort of the, or it was decided that any procedure would need to be held off, mm-hmm. since there wasn't enough protective gear. I mean, that was only a very short amount of time, I would say, until more supplies came, but for sure you would have to adjust and then just talk to patients, and they would usually understand, or even would ask for a delay in treatment, right? Just saying, hey listen, I know I'm taking sort of chances, but I would rather hold off on being treated right now than you know, risking the contraction of the disease per se.
Everyone, this is Dr. Reske, and he is a specialist in the area of geriatric care. And of course, he has an interest in cancer research as well. And so those two applications are very unique, and I guess have some similarities, because there's a weakening in the system of both particular persons who would be suffering from circumstances around either the disease or age. So did you have patients that you had to care for that contracted COVID and were cancer patients, or was there any combination that you dealt with?
So the way the hospital, once the outbreak really spiked, managed the COVID patients is that all COVID positive patients would go on a particular COVID service. Okay. Whether they had cancer or whether they had a heart attack and needed to be seen, let's say, by the cardiologist, you know, or yada yada. Really, since I was on service during the really spike sort of the outbreak, I was surprised, and you know, I even talked to some of my colleagues who were in the ICU, that there were thankfully at least from our patients or my patients as well, not a lot of cancer patients that had contracted COVID, even though we know from some literature that came out of China that patients that have cancer and contract COVID have for sure a higher propensity to develop severe symptoms. But that's thankfully something that at least I did not see here in our hospital.
Well, that is great news, because I know that had to be just another layer of challenges and another area to try to figure out how do we treat both circumstances and both diseases.
Yeah, it's very stressful for patients, right?
Yes.
Not only are you fearful of your disease that might progress, but then you have to be fearful of your immune system not to be as good as, let's say, others, and already you know, struggling with having cancer or some side effects from chemotherapy treatment, and then fearing that you might contract the virus and that you might have significantly worse symptoms. So just the mindset and the fear of patients is very stressful.
Well, you mentioned that your colleagues, you all had conversation just about how challenging everything was. And I'm sure you all had a lot to talk about because something new was happening all the time or something different was occurring that you just had to figure out how to treat. How have your colleagues been maintaining their health and their mindset? Because we have said and realized that this has been a mental strain on everybody in the health profession. And so we continue to applaud everyone that remains operating at the optimum level to keep everybody healthy. So how has it been mentally for your colleagues?
Yeah, so I fear, given the fact that once the outbreak really hit, we were all very engaged of trying to learn and adjust to the new world that had transitioned all of a sudden into telemedicine, right? It's not really that you had a lot of time to think about how you yourself necessarily feel because you were so engaged on trying to adjust to changes in the way you practice. And it's interesting that we do have very regular conferences, but really haven't had much in physical interaction because a lot of, you know, folks might work from home and do the visits from their computer at home. I'm a lot in the office, and I haven't really, let's say, physically seen a lot of colleagues except for having seen them virtually during the meetings. But I mean, we'll ask each other, is everyone doing okay? Mm-hmm. And we'll share different stories or different experiences, because in one way or the other, everyone has been personally affected, you know, whether it's through personal experience or experience that the immediate family has had, right? So it has been just very interesting to share and then talk about the different experiences. You know, there are some colleagues who have lost family members because of it, and it's very heartbreaking. So it has had implications for anyone and everyone, in, you know, whether it's psychological, whether it's financial. I know for some colleagues as well who, you know, might have lost their jobs or had significant pay cuts, and that adds a whole level of stress as well.
Yes, I am sure. There are so many areas. I know that this will be a discussion for many, many years to come, and research behind what was done and how things could have been done maybe differently, but just been reacting because you learn something and then you react to try to stay a step ahead or to protect what is valuable. And at this point, it's the life of everyone that is valuable.
Wow. Thank you so much for continuing to listen and enjoy the Focus Podcast. I'm singing Lisa. We're talking to Dr. Thomas Reske, an assistant professor of clinical medicine in New Orleans. He's sharing with us his care for the elderly as COVID-19 progresses and his journey thus far to continue providing care. Let's get back into the conversation.